This sermon is something I need, so I'm hoping if I need it, that maybe a few of you do. I'm not sure. Maybe my priorities are just completely out of kilter, but I thought I'm speaking more to myself than possibly anyone else here today. I just wanted to ask you a question. What do we have zeal for? Are our priorities in the right place? So this sermon will be about zeal. We will look at a few examples of people in this world that definitely have zeal and passion for what they do. And then we'll look at an example from the Bible where zeal is placed in the order that it should be. The focus is on what it should be with this person in the Bible. Zeal, according to Webster's Dictionary, is defined as a strong feeling of interest and enthusiasm that makes someone very eager or determined to do something. A strong feeling of interest and enthusiasm that makes someone very eager or determined to do something. If you will, turn to 1 Corinthians 9. Corinthians 9, we're going to start with this verse, and then we will conclude with the verse right below it for this sermon. 1 Corinthians 9, verse 24. It says, "Do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may obtain it." People can seek something with all of their heart, all of their might, but having zeal does not necessarily mean that you're doing it for the right focus. Your priorities are out of kilter. Today I'd like to look at a few examples of people in this world. Yes, from most people's standpoint, they're very successful. But their zeal's in the wrong place. Their focus is entirely in the wrong place. Every athlete that plays professional sports, they have to be driven to stay competitive in their sport. If they're not, someone else that's younger, stronger, faster, they're going to take their place. If they don't, they won't have the fame, the glory's gone, the money's gone. How many athletes have we seen that made millions and millions of dollars that are bankrupt within a couple of years? The fame, glory, money is all gone if they do not stay focused. Now, is their focus on what God wants them to do? Paul says run the race to win, but if that's your entire world is winning some sporting event, that's wrong. That's wrong. I want to give you a couple of quotes from two different athletes. These are both basketball players, two of the greatest basketball players that ever played, I think. First one says, "I focus on one thing and one thing only. That's trying to win as many championships as I can." One focus in his life. One more quote from this same guy. "There's a choice that we have to make as people, as individuals. If you want to be great at something, there's a choice you have to make. We all can be masters at our craft, but you have to make a choice. What I mean by that is there are inherent sacrifices that come along with that. Family time, hanging out with friends, being a great friend, being a great son, nephew, whatever the case may be, those have to be sacrificed. That comes along with making the decision to win." Both of these were Kobe Bryant. Great athlete, phenomenal basketball player. Is he zealous for the game of basketball? Absolutely. But where's his focus? Should we be focused on that? Another one, and I'm not picking on Kobe Bryant. I think you could find these. He just happens to be quoted quite a bit. Here's another quote from someone that Jason and Noreen know well that perhaps could have been the greatest basketball player of all time. He says, "This game is my wife." He didn't say the game is my life. He said, "The game is my wife. It demands loyalty and responsibility, and it gives me back fulfillment and peace." To be at that level, your focus has to be on that one prize. Now, you can take lessons from these people on how to succeed, but also the focus must be on what the ultimate prize is. Should we look at sports as it? And I've had times in my life where that's all that I was focused on, and that's wrong. That's completely wrong. Now, while we look at athletes and entertainers, yes, we see the different aspects of their life where they're obsessed with this one focus in their life. But it's also in business. Business is that way. And people that we look up to in this world have one focus. Here's a quote from Bill Gates. It says, I never took a day off in my 20s. Not one single day. And I'm still fanatical, but I will take a day off once every year or so. Think about that quote. An entire decade. Never took a single day off. My first thought was starting to add up Sabbaths. 52 Sabbaths in a year, an entire decade, 520 Sabbaths that we would have missed had our focus been where his was. And what's scary, just like the sports, how many people in Harvard Business School, Wharton School of Business, every school, who do they want to be like? They want to be like Bill Gates. And like so many kids want to be the next Kobe Bryant, want to be the next Peyton Manning. And you can look at Peyton Manning, at the focus that he puts in the sport as well. The priorities of so many people are just mixed up. Again, I look at myself. Do we just take the Sabbath off as a day of rest, but we can't wait for sunset so we can get back to work? So we can turn the game on to see how the second half's going when Kentucky's playing basketball. That's a shot at myself. So, but our priorities have to change if we want the reward that God promises us. Look at how this world has corrupted us compared to some of the examples we see in Hebrews 11. People not receiving the promise, and yet they were faithful to the end. So let's look at an example right now that we should follow from the Bible. I'd like to focus on Paul. I think he has so many scriptures about being zealous, being passionate. Paul faced persecution that we can't begin to understand in our lives. Let's go to 2 Corinthians 11. Second Corinthians 11, verses 23 through 27. Paul's talking about some of the obstacles that he faced. He says, are they ministers of Christ? I speak as a fool. I am more. In labors more abundant, in stripes above measure, in prisons more frequently, in deaths often. From the Jews, 5 times I received 40 stripes minus one. Because many times they thought 40 stripes would possibly kill you. So he gave 39. 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. A night and a day I have been in the deep. In journeys often. In perils of the Gentiles. In perils in the city. In perils in the wilderness. In perils in the sea. In perils among false brethren. In weariness and toil. In sleeplessness often. In hunger and thirst, in fastings often, in cold and nakedness. And I think about sometimes if I could lose a job because I keep the Sabbath or keep the entire feast and focus, that's my worry. When you read someone who did truly focus on God's priorities, would he worry about losing a contract, losing a job because he kept the Sabbath? That's almost laughable when you consider what some of these men went through, what they were willing to endure because their focus and their zeal was on that ultimate reward. But it shows, because I'm sure we've all thought about, is this going to affect my career if I have to tell them about the Sabbath? It shows how much this world actually influences us, how different this world is than the way it should be, because that is our thought. it's not. Okay, if I lose this job, so what? I'll go get something else. I'm not being beaten, not being thrown in jail because of being persecuted. I'm going to lose a job, so what? You know? So I'd like to give, I think I have 5 points to examine Paul's example and exactly the zeal that we need to show to keep God's way. The first one is we will face hardships if God is using us. We will face hardships if God is using us. If you look at the largest churches in the world right now, these mega churches, Uber churches and stuff, they teach something called prosperity preaching. If you follow God's way, you're going to be blessed. Give money to us. You're going to be blessed. And life's going to be great. That's not what the Bible says, is it? Most often, if you follow God's way because this is Satan's world, you're not going to have it made. You're going to face things that are challenging to you. Let's look at Acts 9, if you will. Paul was a very powerful person in his world. He was against most of the disciples. There's speculation. It's very probable that he was at the trial of Stephen. He was certainly there when he was stoned. And he was for all of this. He was for killing the disciples. But if God started using him, Paul had to go through a lot of hardships when God actually called him. Let's go Acts 9, verse 1. We'll read quite a bit of this. Then Paul, still breathing threats and murder against the disciples of the Lord, went to the high priest and asked letters from him to the synagogues of Damascus, so that if he found any who were of the way, whether men or women, he might bring them bound to Jerusalem. He was very much doing the persecuting. He was not being persecuted. He was doing the persecuting. Verse 3, and as he journeyed, he came near Damascus. And suddenly a light shone around him from heaven. Then he fell to the ground and heard a voice saying to him, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? Verse 5, and he said, Who are you, Lord? Then the Lord said, I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting. It is hard for you to kick against the goads. So he, trembling and astonished, said, Lord, what do you mean to do? What do you want me to do? I'm sorry. Then the Lord said to him, Arise and go into the city, and you will be told what you must do. And the men who were with him stood speechless because they heard a voice and they saw no one. Then Saul arose from the ground, and when his eyes were opened, he saw no one. But they led him by the hand and brought him into Damascus. And he was 3 days without sight. God struck him down. 3 days without sight. He did not eat. He did not drink. But immediately he started preaching the word of Christ in the synagogues, and that he was the Son of God. Verse 21. Let's go down. I'm sorry, I skipped from verse 9 down to verse 20 on that last one. Verse 21 said, Then all who heard were amazed and said, Is this not he who destroyed those who call on his name in Jerusalem and has come here for that purpose, so they might bring them bound to the chief priest? But Saul increased all the more in strength, and confounded the Jews who dwelt in Damascus, proving that this Jesus is the Christ. Now down to verse 26. And think about this from both sides, how frightening it would have been as one of the disciples. But when Saul had come to Jerusalem, he tried to join the disciples, but they were all afraid of him. Wouldn't you be? You knew that he was involved in killing the people that followed what you did, and all of a sudden they're supposed to welcome him in with open arms. That would be scary. But they were afraid of him and did not believe that he was a disciple. But Barnabas took him in. That took a lot of faith for someone like Barnabas to take him in and rely on that faith that he was what he said he was. And brought him to the apostles, and he declared to them how he'd seen the Lord. So he was with them, verse 28, at Jerusalem, coming in and going out. So he began to work with the disciples. Think about Paul before. Was he zealous before God struck him down? Very much so. but his zeal was focused on the wrong area. His priorities were 180 degrees from where they should have been. He was persecuting people that he ended up being a leader of. So second point, right, Paul here, and you see throughout his life, this second point was a very crucial element of his entire life. We must not lose focus. I have a WKRN Channel 2 app on my phone, and I was talking to Mike and Barry a few minutes ago, and I always check to see when it buzzes just to see what it was. And the Powerball's up to $900 million. That's the focus of the world right now. And I'll be honest, I had a teacher knock on my door yesterday, said, "Hey, you owe me $4. I said, "What for?" "Oh, we're getting a pool. So if we hit the lottery..." I was in a pool at school and have to split it with 100 other teachers, so that's good. But the whole world right now, that's a big focus. You turn the news on, saw it last night, it's about this Powerball, almost $1 billion worth. But the focus of Paul, once he was called by God, remained on that ultimate prize, not money, not something that can go away tomorrow. His focus was on that ultimate reward, which we'll see at the end. Let's go to 2 Timothy 4. Verses 7 and 8. How wonderful at the end of our lives would it be able to look back and say what Paul did in verses 7 and 8, 2 Timothy 4. "I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Finally, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give to me on that day. And not to me only, but also to all who have loved his appearing." He mentioned early in that first verse that when you run a race, only one can obtain the prize. It says here, in this race, there's not one winner. Everyone that remains faithful has that zeal and that passion for God and has that focus. They will all receive the prize. Have to remain focused, just like Paul says here. It's very easy to fall into these traps that the world has. How many times have we seen anyone that's been in the church for 30, 40 years, even someone 5 years, we've seen people come and go. They lose that focus. Lose that focus. You'll see someone out in Murfreesboro somewhere that I had forgotten all about, that they used to go to church with us, and realize they don't even remember anything about it. Remember the changes at Worldwide right at that changing time? And a potlucks within a few weeks, people were bringing pork. And, oh, couldn't wait. People that grew up in the church, had never known anything else, could not wait to bring stuff to other people in the church, potlucks, and bring stuff that we had all known at that time. No, we don't eat that. People could not wait. How quickly they forget. Have to remain focused. Have to remain focused. Point number three. Point number three, there is a greater purpose for our lives. Not winning $900 million. Would it be nice? Maybe. And then you hear the nightmares that come out of someone winning something like that. Realize they ruin their lives. Would it be great to be NBA champion, Super Bowl champion? Of course it would. But it's something greater than that that we're all looking for. And this end time, let's look at Revelation 21. This is for all people. All people on earth. Revelation 21 and verse 4. This is the prize. This is what we're shooting for. Verse 4. "And God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There shall be no more death, nor sorrow, nor crying. There will be no more pain, for the former things have passed away." Read the bulletin this week. Look at the pain in this world. Look at what so many face. It doesn't compare to the persecution perhaps that Paul faced, but it's what every person in this world has to go through at some point. You may not face it personally, but you're going to see it in your family. You're going to see things that cause you to hurt, even though you may not be going through it yourselves. I had two incidents this year, first year of teaching, even first semester, I guess. Two little girls, and I really, really like one. I didn't get to know the other one so much. 12 years old, both of them, had both been raped by their stepfathers, having to deal with that in school. I don't face these incidents myself, but man, it hurts to see kids and know walking through the halls that they're going through this stuff. God will wipe away every tear. That's the ultimate goal, not stuff that we're facing today. Yes, do we go through pain as individuals? Yes. But that's something that people have faced from the very beginning. God's going to wipe away every tear. That's the greater purpose for our lives, is to be there when that happens. Point number four. God uses those with zeal. We've all worked with people who just existed, were there to get a paycheck, usually would complain, were not driven towards doing better than what they absolutely had to. God, if you look in the Bible, didn't typically call those people. He wants people with zeal. Mark 12. Mark 12 and verse 30, these are the greatest two commandments God has given. Mark 12, verse 30 says, "And you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength." This is the first commandment. Verse 31, "And the second, like it, is this: you shall love your neighbor as yourself. There is no other commandment greater than these." There is no way for you to follow this example. Love the Lord with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind without being zealous for it. It's not possible. You can't do this halfway and keep these two commandments. If you cannot love God, how can you love your neighbor? Because you don't respect the laws that God has put out there. Look at the people that God chose. Peter. All or nothing, everything he did. You're not going to just wash my feet, wash my whole body, and you're not going to do it first. But and that, and when he cut the servant's or the officer's ear off, if you're in the middle of a conflict, was he aiming for that ear? It's not likely. Peter was aiming to do major, major damage. Peter was all or nothing. Look at David. Even from a little boy, David today would have been the perfect candidate in school for Ritalin, because there's no question they would have said he's too rambunctious. We have to give him Ritalin. No question about it. But he was zealous throughout his life. It was all or nothing with David as well. And certainly Paul, when you look at his life, even before, when he was persecuting the Christians, was he doing it with all he had? Yes. Right or wrong, he was zealous. And God used that. God turned that around and used it for his purposes. Can you imagine someone like Bill Gates with the abilities? We don't have the abilities of Bill Gates. Someone like that, if God actually called them, what they could accomplish if they focused zeal like that in the right way. But we know 1 Corinthians 1, that's not the case, is it? It's not going to call people like this who are great in this world. 1 Corinthians 1, verse 26. 1 Corinthians 1, verse 26 through 29, we have a song about it. It's not fun to think about when we like to think highly of ourselves, but it's what it is. 1 Corinthians 1, verses 26 through 29. For you see your calling, brethren, that not many wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called. But God has chosen the foolish things of the world to put to shame the wise. And God has chosen the weak things of the world to put to shame the things which are mighty. And the base things of the world and the things which are despised God has chosen. And the things which are not to bring to nothing the things that are. Verse 29. That no flesh should glory in his presence. That no flesh should glory in his presence. We're not very much when you look at the world standards. Most of us, if you look, would say we're barely getting by and we're not much. But when we hear people talking about the Bible, usually, do we not feel usually that we can make an argument for ourselves against people that know 12 verses in the New Testament? We typically know things that God expects of us because we do have that focus in that sense. We do have that biblical knowledge. Point number 5. Through God's Spirit, we will use this zeal for the right purpose. Through God's Spirit, we will use this zeal for the right purpose. Again, Paul was zealous. Paul had that zeal, but he was using it for the wrong reason. Until God started working with him, he was using it for the wrong purpose. And if we have God's Spirit, he will use that zeal. Let's look at Ephesians 6. Ephesians 6, 11 through 13. I think we could look at this as God's Spirit. We could look at this as using God's Spirit. Verse 11 says, put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. Verse 12, for we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in the heavenly places. Verse 13, therefore take up the holy armor of God that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand. Verse 14, let's go there as well. Stand therefore, having girded your waist with truth, having put on the breastplate of righteousness. Goes on and explains the entire armor of God. All of this we need daily. And with that zeal, and we're using that spirit, we can stand up. It talks about the powers of darkness and all that. Is this an evil world that we're faced with every day where none of the priorities are where they should be? It certainly is. You know, we just went through Christmas and you see this wonderful, oh, let's give to charity. Oh, we're going to do it for 2 weeks. It's gone now. No one's helping anyone now, are they? But for 2 weeks, you can't go somewhere without that little bell ringing. Well, that's great for those 2 weeks. What about the rest of the year? Are these people go back in holes and then come back and, oh, they need help just these 2 weeks? No. We're to use this zeal and help people all the time, not just certain times of the year. And this armor of God, God's Spirit, all of this is going to help us to put this zeal to the right use. He also warns us. Do we have to have zeal? Or can we just go through, well, I'm going to let someone else do it. That's okay. They can take care of things this week. God warns us that that perhaps is one of the worst things you can do. Revelation 3. Heard so much from the time I was little about the eras of God, to Philadelphian, Laodiceans, all of these different eras. Is it possible they're eras, or is it possible we're wrong? We've been wrong on some things, have we not? But it's also an attitude here. This Laodicean attitude can be any time, and has gone through history. It was obvious at this time it was written, the Laodiceans had this attitude as well. Revelation 3, verses 15 through 21. I know your works, that you are neither cold nor hot. I would wish you were cold or hot. He would rather that they completely ignore God's way than just be lukewarm. So then, because you are lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will vomit you out of my mouth. Verse 17, because you say, I am rich, have become wealthy, and have need of nothing. Are we there in this country? From other countries' viewpoints, I would say we are. We certainly don't struggle like the majority of the people throughout the history of the world, do we? But you don't know that you're wretched, miserable, poor, blind, and naked. I counsel you to buy from me gold refined in the fire that you may be rich, and white garments that you may be clothed, that the shame of your nakedness may not be revealed, and anoint your eyes with eye salve that you may see. As many as I love, I rebuke and chasten. And here it gives hope, even if maybe people have drifted and coasted. It said, therefore be zealous and repent. Behold, I stand at the door. It's not over just because you did. You can stand up for God, and at the end be like Paul and say, I've fought the good fight. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come into him and dine with him and he with me. To him who overcomes, I will grant to sit with me on my throne, as I also overcame and sat down with my Father on his throne. If these are eras and we're in the Laodicean era, verse 21 clearly states you don't have to be. You can be zealous and change. To him who overcomes, I will grant to sit. Just because there's a possibility, yes, we are rich from any other aspect of the world or from any other standpoint, but we can overcome. We can be zealous, as he talks about. So as I finish this, I'd like you to just remember those 5 points. You know, we will face hardships, but don't lose our focus. Do not lose the focus where it should be. And there's a greater purpose for our lives. It's not here. It's not winning championships, becoming multi-millionaire. That's not the greater purpose in our lives. And God uses those with zeal. He does not use people who sit on the sideline and expect everything given to him. He wants that zeal and passion from us. And through his Spirit, we'll be able to use this in the right way. I started with 1 Corinthians 9, verse 24. Would like to go to 1 Corinthians 9, finish with the verse following, verse 25. Again, our prize is greater than anything we can receive in this world, as long as we stay focused. Verse 25 says, and everyone who competes for this prize is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a perishable crown. They do it to win an NBA championship, a Super Bowl, to become the wealthiest people in the world. A perishable crown. But we for an imperishable crown, something that can never be taken away. We're chasing a greater prize than anything that's been seen on this earth. But we just need to remember that if we're chasing it, we need to have that zeal that God expects of us.